I have two readings this morning, both of them relatively brief. The first one comes from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 22, verses 37 through 40. It'll be verses that you're very familiar with. I'm reading from the New Revised Standard Version. He said to them, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all of your mind. This is the greatest and the first commandment, and a second is like it." And I'll make this comment. The Greek there suggests not just like it, but is essentially the same as it. A second is like it. You shall love your neighbors as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the laws and the prophets. And then a quote from the Dalai Lama, who said, "The rationale for loving others is the recognition of the simple fact that every living being has the same right to and the same desire for happiness and not suffering. And the consideration that you, as one individual, are one life unit compared with the multitude of others in their ceaseless quest for happiness."
She thinks life is fair and God hears every prayer and everyone gets there ever after. She thinks love is love and you work hard, that's enough. Skin's just skin and it doesn't matter. And that her friend's older brother's gonna keep his hands to himself. And that somebody's gonna believe her when she tells. But what are you gonna tell her when she's wrong? Will you just shrug and say it's been that way all along? What are you gonna tell her when she figures out that all this time you built her up to some that she could be the president? Would it help us get there any faster? Do you let her think the deck's not stacked, or gay or straight or white or black? You just dream and anything can happen. What are you gonna tell her when she's wrong? Will you just shrug and say it's been that way all along? What are you gonna tell her when she figures out that all the time moved throughout just so the world could let her down? Yeah, what are you gonna tell her? What are you gonna tell her? Tell her not to fight. Is it worth the sacrifice? Can you look her in the face? Promise her that things will change. Maybe you can't. 'Cause there ain't no way you can explain what
like to give a little thanks and appreciation to Stephanie. Y'all have been listening to me preach long enough to know that I don't really talk about topics that you might hear in every church around here on any given Sunday. And the week of, I let Stephanie know what the talk's going to be about, and somehow she pulls together music that isn't really written for churches, fits what we're doing. And she does it week in and week out, and it always works and always matters. So, you probably already started picking up on this with North Carolina's legislature overturning the governor's veto of the draconian, and I do mean draconian, anti-abortion law this week. I have to think that most of you assumed that I would be reviewing a bit about spirituality and abortions today. And well, you would be absolutely right. My message today is entitled, "The Bible is not anti-abortion, and neither should you be." So, several years ago, I was invited to be on a news station that was in central eastern North Carolina, actually more towards the coast, and they were doing a special that they were producing. The focus of the special, at least in terms of how I remember it, was giving various religious perspectives about controversial issues. Not so surprisingly, I was representing the progressive Christian perspective. As best as I can remember, I shared the space with an imam, a rabbi, a priest, a monk, a nun, and a few other folks that I don't remember quite as clearly. At some point, we came to the question of abortion. The moderator decided to start with me. After his question, I looked up and down the line at the other guests and said, "Well, there's only one woman here. I suggest we start with her. What she has to say about this," I said, "is much more important than any of what the rest of us guys might have to say." You might not be surprised to learn that a number of the guys in the room started looking at me like I'd just grown second hand. As I recall, a few of the guys took pretty severe issue with my statement, to the point that a few immediately defended the importance of their and God's perspective on the matter of long before they even make any space for the nun to speak. Those same guys also made a point to avoid speaking to me after the filming was done. The nun, on the other hand, said a few kind words afterwards, and we had a lovely and all too short conversation. I'm sharing that story with you as a way to say I recognize that this is a controversial subject and that some folks are going to disagree with my perspective. But I am sharing it to also say I have no doubt that unlike the guys who avoided speaking to me, we can all be adults about having a difference in opinion and manage to get along just fine afterwards. Most importantly, though, I shared this story as a way to say I am a cisgendered male. I recognize that that eliminates me from being a fully authoritative voice on the question of abortion. However, when I look at what's going on in many states, including our state of North Carolina, all these who have passed restrictive abortion laws, which now actually makes it, this is not a joke, makes it more difficult to get an abortion in the United States than it was in 1650. As well as looking at the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade, I think that it is inexcusable for a minister not to address this issue publicly. I also think it is worth noting that the filming of the news special, as I've said, that by many of the men basically equated their perspectives, the anti-abortion perspective, with God's perspective. I'd say that there might be some delusions of grandeur going on there, but we'll leave that to their psychiatrists. I'd also say that that those who were representing the Christian faith on that panel have not read their Bible very closely, and ultimately, I would say, were taking God's name in vain by attempting to put their personal desires and words into the mouth of God. Now, hear me clearly as I say any time that we're considering the Bible and health-related issues. I do not recommend anyone, I can't believe I'm saying this out loud, I do not recommend anyone getting health information or making health decisions based on a collection of books written some 2,000 years ago, some of them even longer. But if you insist on doing so, particularly when it comes to the issue of abortion, at least be honest about what the books actually say. What they actually say. First of all, in the New Testament, it doesn't directly deal with the question of abortion or even when life begins. And then the Old Testament, the Jewish text, it turns out that that's not an anti-biblical text at all. In Genesis, it tells us life begins at first breath. So, at birth. In the 21st chapter of Exodus, a fetus is not given rights equal to or greater than the rights of a mother. Numbers even says that in the case of adultery, fetuses should be aborted as proof. And in 2 Kings, God threatens to rip open pregnant women. Hosea and Isaiah both speak of God's willingness to destroy unborn fetuses. Honestly, there's other examples, but I think you can get the point that I'm trying to make here. As moderate to conservative Christians continue to try to uphold their positions by saying that it's biblical, these are all important facts that you need to know. You simply can't use the Bible to justify an anti-abortion stance without ignoring a whole lot of verses that suggest otherwise. But let's be clear here. Religion really isn't the real reason that folks hold an anti-abortion perspective, even when they think that it is. It's all politics. A particularly uncaring, unloving, racist, patriarchal brand of politics, but politics nonetheless. Now, understandably, it might seem strange to many of you that I specifically mentioned racism, but racism is exactly why abortion started to matter to white evangelicals, particularly in the South. Which just makes it all the more messed up and possibly incredibly revealing. To have seen, yet again, the anti-abortion protest sign when my wife and I were volunteering at the clinic yesterday that rewrites Black Lives Matters to say unborn lives matter. You've got to remember, as I've mentioned before, the Southern Baptist Convention passed resolutions in 1971, 1974, and 1976, which endorsed access to abortion, going as far as to say that the government should play a very limited role in the issue. That's just in the 70s. Abortion just wasn't that big of an issue for white evangelicals. But racism, white supremacy, and desegregation, those were. As covered on NPR's history podcast called Throughline, a groundbreaking court case, Alexander v. Holmes County Board of Education. It enacted the integration of public schools in Mississippi. In the first year of required integration in Holmes County, the number of white students attending public school fell from around 700 to 28. Year two, zero white students after they were required to have integration. Which clearly begs the question, where did they go? Private schools. Specifically, evangelical, Christian-operated, quote, segregation schools. Even more specifically, and this is the really important part, tax-exempt evangelical, Christian-operated segregation schools. That's important because the schools weren't only practicing segregation, they were founded on it, and they were receiving tax-exempt status in spite of it. So a group of parents sued based on the fact that an organization that practices radical discrimination is not, by definition, a charitable organization. And they, of course, were right, and they, of course, won their case. And now, keep in mind, these segregation schools weren't just in Mississippi. They were throughout the South. And as you might imagine, the ruling hit them, all of them, throughout the South, right where it hurt, in their pocketbook. And it made it very difficult to maintain their segregated schools. Folks, that right there was the moment that things changed. The moment in time when conservative evangelical Christians decided that they needed to change their approach to politics, and instead of seeing it as beneath them and staying largely away from it, get heavily involved in it. Let me say this more plainly. White conservative evangelical Christians got involved in politics because they wanted to be able to be racist and still get funding from the government. Particularly after that ruling in Mississippi, their leadership was more than ready to get involved. The trick was finding an issue, that issue, that would galvanize their followers. And while this change of heart happened because of their racism stemming from white supremacy, they knew that that white supremacy, that racism, could not be the issue that they rallied the public with. Now, specifically, a conservative political activist strategist named Paul Weyrich. He is the one that realized that racism couldn't be the issue that they rallied the public with. And he set out to find the new issue that could be leveraged. 5 years after Roe v. Wade, it hit him. And in one of his papers from 1978, he excitedly says that he has found the perfect issue to mobilize evangelicals to vote Republican. Abortion. That's how we got there. And thus began the Republican Party's Southern strategy. It was officially based on the issue of abortion with a heavy dose of disingenuous religious backing, but the reality is that it was truly just rooted in white supremacy's racism, which, as I said a moment ago, makes it all the more messed up and possibly incredibly revealing to see anti-abortion protest signs that rewrite Black Lives Matter to say unborn lives matter. So, the conservative fury over abortion, one, is not biblical. And two, it only started mattering so much to them because their racist leaders convinced them to be furious over it. And I'd like to say, I don't use the word furious lightly here. Not only did I experience them, and I suggested that women's voices should be the primary voices when it comes to this issue of abortion, but as I mentioned, my wife and I sometimes volunteer at the local clinic as escorts, and we've heard the horrible and psychologically manipulative things that are shouted at those that are arriving for treatment. And that doesn't even begin to compare to other things like clinic bombings and the like. As a matter of fact, one of our friends that also volunteers at the clinic was hit by a car by one of the protesters, and the courts agreed that it wasn't an accident. We're talking about fury. Let's go back to the issue of, is it biblical to be anti-abortion? Hopefully I've already demonstrated the Bible has very little to directly say about abortion, and if anything, it says that life begins at first breath, not at conception, and it values the mother's rights over the fetus rights. And I've also said, you really ought not to be using books that old to be making health care choices. But, if you do want to use your Bible to inform you on your thoughts on abortion, there is one biblical perspective that I actually very strongly believe you should use, and I've shared these thoughts with you before. It is the overarching message of what the Christian faith is supposed to be about. It is the biblical hermeneutic of love. Love. As Matthew records Jesus saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, on these two commandments hang all the laws of the prophets. So let's take that core understanding, that core question, and look at some facts, and I mean facts, well-researched facts about abortion. A 2007 study led out of the University of California in San Francisco called The Turnaway, which involved over 1,000 women seeking abortions at clinics, sought to discover if abortions hurt or improved the lives of those having them. Some of the women had been provided abortions and others, for various reasons, couldn't have them. Part of the results of the study is this. It found abortion, far from harming most women, helps them in very measurable ways. If the question is it loving? Then I ask you, is it loving to deny anyone that kind of help and care? It is a fact for men, if they choose, their sex life does not risk their future. Lack of access to abortion prevents women from that same reality. Among other things, not having your sex life risk your plans for your future makes a person fully able to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. If the question is it loving? Then I ask you, is it loving to deny anyone that kind of hope, happiness, and future? Legal abortions recognize a woman as a person rather than having fewer rights than a fetus. The question is it loving? Then I ask you, is it loving to deny anyone that kind of recognition of the rights that come along with it? Access to safe abortions prevents medical harm and even death. The question is it loving? Then I ask you, is it loving to deny anyone care that could save their lives? People who receive abortions are less likely to have mental health issues than those to whom it is denied. Again, the question is it loving? Then I ask you, is it loving to deny access to a future with better mental health? The data also shows that people who are denied abortions are more likely to become unemployed, to be on public welfare, to be below the poverty line, and to become victims of domestic violence. If the question is it loving, then I ask you, is it loving to deny anyone the kind of help that helps ensure a life that is not so unnecessarily full of life-altering struggles. And finally, we come back full circle. Banning abortion creates a system that favors the rich, who I promise you will get safe abortions. Which also means it makes it a race issue. After all, wealth distribution in the U.S. is skewed heavily when it comes to race. The question is it loving? And I believe that is biblically the question that actually matters. Is it loving? Then I ask you, is it loving to deny people access to safe and needed health care based on their financial status or their race? Is it loving? The answer to all of these questions, of course, is a resounding no. No, it is not loving to restrict women from abortions, period. End of case. For me, if you are a follower of the teachings of Jesus, if you believe in the power and the humanity of love, there is only one rational position on the question of abortion. It is a position that stands against the racism, sexism, and classism that all play a role in anti-abortion stances. We must not only support abortion rights in our words and our outlooks, but also in our voting, I've said that many times before, and in our actions. Educate yourselves with facts like I have shared with you today. Put up one of these signs. They're in the back. I've got yard signs with them now as well. There's metal signs. Yard standards are there now as well. Put them up in your yard, encouraging conversation with your neighbors, and show up at every rally that you can, because numbers matter. If the question is it loving? And I do believe that is the question that matters the most. I want to be found not just siding with love, but actively siding with love and demanding that all people are treated with love. For me, the issue of religion and abortion comes down to that. Love. I encourage you, I deplore you, choose love.
Let the web of relationship be laid furthest runner, a power piled up to the sky. Over the illusion of autonomy on which it relies, over any absolute that nature does not fly.
Accept some words and grab hold of the ones that speak to you right now in this moment. Let's bow our heads together. It is easy to get caught up in the business and troubles of our own lives, so much so that we forget we are called to be transformers for justice in this world. There is so much pain, so much loneliness, so much sickness, so much loss, so much injustice in this world that it can sometimes seem like just the way things are. Let us never forget that creation contains the possibility of heaven on earth, a fellowship of humanity. Let us never forget that the teachings of Jesus, as well as the teachings of so many other great spiritual leaders, can lead us to a world where suffering is greatly reduced. Until a time may we learn not only to confront injustices, but to comfort those who suffer and to be open to receiving comfort when we are the ones suffering. Amen. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may your words and your actions bring that love and happiness to all of those you meet.
Welcome to the patriarchy, you're nobody. Expectations fall upon you from the moment you begin. Society is anarchy, and we are so behind.